You know, it's this blank piece of paper, and it's exciting because it's a blank piece of paper, but it's scary because it's a blank piece of paper as well.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the EdTech podcast for episode 23. First off, this week I am delighted to announce that the venue for the EdTech podcast launch party, hashtag EdTechPod, will be Loughborough University London. A huge shout out to Adam and the team at Loughborough London for their generosity and help on this matter, and you can check them out at lborolondon.ac.uk. I can't wait to welcome over 100 of you now registered from across schools, universities, colleges, associations, government, startups, blue chips, investors and education media. Loughborough University London is set just behind or part of the Here East complex in the Olympic Park, and details of how to reach the venue will be uploaded to Eventbrite imminently. It's going to be a great chance to say thank you, introduce you to one another and have a few drinks. On that front, a few people have inquired about sponsoring the launch. Any interest would be very welcome so that everyone can have an even better evening, and you can contact the edtechpodcast at gmail.com. A few final tickets remain for educators who can make it via Eventbrite. In other news, ICT Evangelist has relaunched his website. I met an ex-Angry Bird who is launching a game which happens to teach particle physics, and I'm off to meet Chinese investors interested in EdTech at the House of Lords this Saturday. But first, hold your hats everyone. This week, I'm inviting you from this point in to leave a voice recording to the EdTech podcast at our Facebook page via the Messenger function, where you hold, record and send. Each week, I can then pick the best of these and play them out to everyone via the podcast. This will be a great way to get everyone's voice heard on the show and share the diversity of ideas and what you like, love or want more of. I'd especially welcome those of you listening in from around the world to join in. And if you can't access Facebook, I'm on Skype also at Sophie Bailey, the EdTech podcast. On to this week's interview, Kirsty Tonks, Principal Designate at Shireland Technology Primary School in the UK. Kirsty has over 20 years' experience in education and has become a well-known proponent of the flipped learning methodology. She recently got the opportunity to lead on an entirely new primary school with learning enabled through technology at the heart, which will act as a feeder school to Shireland Academy near Birmingham. This interview took place at the beginning of the summer when Kirsty was an amazing host during her own time, and we had an extensive look around the school. I definitely encourage you to check out the videos and photos with this podcast on the EdTech podcast Instagram feed, which showcase the amazing immersive room for lesson delivery and some discussions with their e-learning manager. In fact, we had so much interesting discussion on our walkabout, I've split this podcast into two episodes, one straight-up interview and two a walkabout around the school featuring the immersive room heavily. I hope you enjoy, and as ever, please leave any comments via Twitter, share the podcast with a friend or rate and review via iTunes or whichever platform you're tuning in from. I'm sat here with Kirsty Tonks, who is Principal Designate at Shireland Technology Primary School, and we are at the Shireland Collegiate Academy, and I've just taken part in quite a fantastic tour of the academy, including the immersive room, and meeting lots of teachers and e-learning developers and students. Just by way of quick introduction, Kirsty can be found on Twitter at Kirsty Tonks SCA, and has previously worked as a teaching school director, assistant principal, learning manager and teacher across 22 years of learning and teaching.
Has it been that long?
In these roles, she has worked with teachers, leaders, parents, students and edtech companies, and is often found speaking on the subject of flipped learning across the UK. So I'm super excited to find out more today about the yet-to-be-open Shireland Technology Primary School, which is a wholly exciting new opportunity to create a flip school from scratch. So we'll talk a little bit about that, about the projects you've got going on here, and I'm sure everything in between as well. So first off, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about you and how you went from a student yourself to principal designate.
Gosh, when you put it like that, 22 years... can I actually remember back that far? I'll try. So I went to a private girls' school in Birmingham. Didn't enjoy it. I came from the wrong side of Birmingham, had an accent, and didn't fit in. And couldn't wait till I left and could go to, as I saw it, a normal school for my post-16. But I'd always wanted to teach, either that or journalism. And the reason why, the biggest motivator for me was because I thought, I've got to be able to do a better job than the teachers that I've had. Because for most people, when they're asked, you know, tell us about the teacher that inspired you, I genuinely struggle to think of one. Having said that, I don't think I would have liked to have taught me. I always say I would like to have been taught by me, but not taught me. I don't think I was probably the easiest of students, but I think that's why in my early years as a teacher, as a primary school teacher, I found it easy, and I particularly relished the challenge of those pupils who were disengaged with learning, because I knew how that felt. And I was able to communicate with them on a level that perhaps other teachers couldn't. And I just loved it. I think it was the first time in my life I actually felt like I had a purpose and a meaning. And I remember thinking, I can really do this. And it was a time when I thought, I'm not just going to be able to float through life and not really know what I'm going to do. I actually want to have a career in this profession that that I love. And that was 22 years ago.
Wow. And how did you go from that slightly challenging student to, on the primary teacher side, getting into the tech aspect of what you do as well?
Well, again, if somebody had said to me at the start of my teaching profession that I would have ended up A, in a secondary school for 10 years, and B, heading up the technology, the use of technology for learning, at a secondary school that had a national reputation for using technology, I probably would have turned and run a mile, because it was never something I was particularly gifted at. And I would never say that I'm necessarily a geek. I do like technology, and I certainly discovered that technology could have an impact in my own classroom at the second school that I taught at. And it was there that I saw that it isn't necessarily the tech itself, but the impact that it could have. And that's what I was most interested in. And I think I've always judged it, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And that's been my philosophy in terms of here at Charlene for the past 10 years, in my role of supporting teachers to use technology for learning, getting students to use it, and also for families to embrace it as well.
We were speaking before about, you know, the fact that if you're a teacher and you're thinking about coming here, generally, you know, that's with the idea that, you know, you will be expected to use technology and to understand how it can have a positive outcome. But are there any challenges that you've experienced, and how have you overcome those?
Back in, I'd say about 10 years ago, when I first did start here, technology wasn't as pervasive in our social lives. So it was very much winning the hearts and minds of staff to take that leap of faith, and not everything on a memory stick, or to, you know, plan lessons not on paper but online, and it wasn't going to disappear. That was hard, and it was all very much down to change management and being strategic in that, and having that conviction that no, we are going to do it, we'll help you, we'll support you along that way, but this is the end goal and this is what it's going to be. It's a lot easier now, because in people's personal lives they're using technology and apps all the time. So I think for teachers who are coming into the profession, it's probably not that huge leap of faith that it was. Having said that, it's from a teacher training perspective, I still think there's a way to go in supporting staff to harness technology for learning. There's a lot more that ITT providers can do.
And what would you recommend as a starting point? I know that you've got, you know, various projects and initiatives with partners out there, but if you had a message to some of those tech providers in terms of how they could help support teachers, what would it be?
Don't focus on the sexy bits. You know, we talk at Charlene about using technology in a mundanely clever way. And I think that's what's been the success here. Yes, we have our teachers who are absolutely innovative and creative and come up with some fabulous ideas, but it's icing on the cake. For us, we're more interested in the cake and looking at how technology can underpin school processes as much as being in the classroom. How can we make things easier for staff? At the moment, I'm doing a piece of work of really looking at the whole lesson planning process. How can we get away from lesson plans being in a Word document and actually feeling a lot more naturalistic in terms of linking with the work that they're producing online to feedback, whether that's oral or video feedback. So that's something I'm working on at the moment, which I'm quite excited about, hopefully ready for the primary school.
Just to delve into that a little bit, at the moment then, in the planning process, is sort of the planning and then the actual lesson delivery separate, but you're looking to create a flow between
Absolutely.
And are you investigating different suppliers that can help support that, or is it something that you'd build in-house? Or
I think at this moment in time we're looking at existing solutions that are out there, you know, online environments that are out there and pieces of software that we're already using. I don't think it's going to be a huge step for us to look at that whole cycle and deliver a much more natural, intuitive way of planning next to work, next to feedback as well, so that it's all in one place. It's not separate, as you say, that the lesson planning is done completely separate. Yeah. It's all in one place. It also means from a management point of view, you can get to things and you can triangulate that a lot easier. So the lesson plan is there with the work that's produced, is there with the feedback and the progress that's made.
Yeah, so those lessons that have a positive outcome and, you know, the feedback is again put back into the planning and...
And the flip learning obviously is a huge part of that as well.
One thing that we were talking about with regards to feedback was using audio feedback and video feedback. So how far along are you with that at the moment?
Well, you know, that came about 4 years ago.
It's exciting because
I remember quite clearly the head of maths
because it's a blank piece
was getting exasperated that he was marking a set of books and actually writing the same thing in a number of them. And particularly with maths, you tend to have common misconceptions. You won't feedback individually on each item. And so he came up with a very high-tech solution of sticking an iPad between a stack of books to hold it up and recording himself about 4 or 5 videos, depending on the range of misconceptions, and then just doing an Excel spreadsheet and pointing the students to what particular YouTube video that he created and created a maths channel online that they needed to look at. And he actually did a mini research project based on that within his class and took feedback. And I think overwhelmingly the students said that they preferred that method of feedback rather than, you know, having to read half a page of notes that for many of our students who've got English as an additional language is quite difficult to, you know, to read and to understand as well. So they actually liked the fact that they could listen and watch their teacher and things like the inflection, the tone of voice as well. They could buy into that and they could rewatch, you know, it is about pausing at any point and coming back to it.
And I'm guessing that saved the teacher time as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm convinced this day that it was just that he wanted to get down the pub.
Yeah.
You know.
Perhaps he was already in the pub.
But he did. I think he managed to halve, maybe not half, but at least a third to a half in terms of his marking. And it was more effective. So that was great. The English department, we had an inset day where people shared good practice and the head of maths shared this and it really resonated with the English department, but they went away and looked at video feedback and decided that actually for them, they couldn't do the video because you'd be creating a video for almost every child because there the feedback is particular to a piece of writing. But they said audio feedback would work much more effectively for them. So they just recorded the feedback on an audio app and then uploaded it for each individual student so the student could actually go through the work and listen to it as the teacher marked the work as well, and they could go through their piece of writing.
And is that all currently hosted on your gateway?
Yeah, that's so right, Office 365.
Yeah, just log in and then they would find that particular piece of feedback.
Absolutely.
Relevant to them.
Yeah, and they can go back to it, and the beauty of it is it doesn't disappear after time. So, you know, for revision purposes, it means that it's always there for them to go back to.
Okay. So main question two, so just thinking about the Shireland Technology Primary School. So we had a bit of a chat about this before, but, you know, for everyone listening, it'd be great to have a kind of update on where we are with that project and opening an entirely new school and a great adventure and responsibility and challenge, but opportunity for you as well. So could you let us know a little bit about how that's all going?
Well, I often say that the idea of opening a brand new school, whether it's a primary or secondary or anything, is a great, exciting opportunity, but it's also scary. You know, it's this blank piece of paper, and it's exciting because it's a blank piece of paper, but it's scary because it's a blank piece of paper as well. But what it will give is a great opportunity for our for the children who come to the primary to already be familiar with a lot of the things that we have here already at Shireland. So when they come to us, you know, they're already familiar with a lot of those methodologies that we have, like flip learning and those approaches and the devices and the software as well. But yes, it is exciting. Where are we at the moment? As with all best laid plans, identifying a site and getting that sorted has kind of paused where we are at the moment. So
but they're not all sitting.
We were hoping for a September 2017 opening, but it's looking like it's going to be 2018. But that's fine because it gives us more time to work on things instead of rushing things through. We can really do a lot of work, and we've had some great support from various people who are equally excited to work with us and help us shape our journey with us. So no, it's great.
And I saw on the blurb as well for the school, you know, it's about creating the smart creatives of the future. So helping enable students to have those skills that perhaps are in demand by the time they leave school or graduate or go on to do different things. For you, what do you see as some of those potential opportunities and skills, and what would a smart creative look like, I suppose?
Well, having technology at the heart of, in the name of the school, is always something that you worry about will date and in all seriousness, technologies will change. We know that. Even by the time we open, we'll be looking at different things to perhaps are around now. But for us, it's not necessarily about the technology. It's the way of learning, and it's absolutely about those skills that you know, the business world are crying out for. They don't necessarily want somebody who knows how to operate an iPad, or, you know how to use Google Hangouts. But what they do want are smart creatives who are adaptable and flexible, so that they can identify which are the best tools to use and the best way to work. You know, being able to collaborate and communicate and work as part of a team. And we want to inspire and engage pupils in their learning that they want to make a difference as well to the world. We want them to have that curiosity about the world, that they ask those questions. They don't just accept that they're always challenging and finding their own way forwards and their independence. And the only way we can do that is through curriculum that we design for them, the way that we shape the school day. And we're already looking at how we can use the freedoms that come with a free school or being an academy, where many schools don't often really look at how you can exploit those. So we're already looking at how we can do that differently. And then underpinning with technology that will be able to free up time or make us use time a lot more effectively as well, whether that's via flip learning or using audio, video feedback in the classroom, so that teachers don't have to take that marking home with them, that they can give on-the-spot feedback there and then to pupils who will understand it and take it on board a lot more readily, rather than reading it the next day when the teachers brought it back into the classroom.
And so all the students have a Surface, a Microsoft Surface as well, to actually engage and I suppose expedite that process of feedback and having everything in one place in that way.
So our Key Stage 2 we'll have a Microsoft Surface device, and in Key Stage 1 we're looking at where the ratio will be. But again, yes, they're going to have devices, but I just wanted to say it's not about the technology. What we're absolutely not about is if you walk into Charland Technology Primary when it opens in 2018, that they're not all sitting in rows with headphones on and just, you know, ploughing through. That's not what it will be about. It will be about using technology as and when is needed, when it's the most effectively used. And
well, there is a real danger of
it will absolutely have an impact on the progress that the pupils will make.
And we were talking previously about the group of people that you've brought together to sort of help inform the ideology, and now that you have time in the run-up to the school opening to inform and to hold you to account, to make sure that, you know, those values that you just spoke about are still on track. And, you know, that goes from everything to the school itself to things like the learning environment. So we're talking about sort of Stephen Heppel's ideas, and, you know, that when you mentioned the school day, the fact that perhaps a normal school day, as we understand it, is actually a legacy of the sort of industrial era. So could you tell us a little bit about that group that have been brought together and some of the ideas that are coming through as well?
Yeah, so I've got lots of ideas. I think of myself as quite an innovative person, but I'm only one person. And this school is not going to be great just on one with one person. And I think the more people that can be there shaping this early on, the better it can be. And I know that some people are quite frightened about challenge, but I really quite like it. It sometimes feels uncomfortable, especially when you think you've had a really good idea and then you have a group of people who absolutely tear it around and you think, ah, perhaps it wasn't as good as you thought it was. But yes, we have a group of primary and secondary practitioners who are, you know, we've worked with in various guises over the past 4 or 5 years, who have come together and met once a half term, voluntarily giving up their time to come and be part of something really quite special and to help us shape this journey and to shape our ideas and absolutely to hold us to account and give us that challenge that we need. And when we started off in the autumn term, we weren't sure if people were going to come. And it's grown to about a group of 10 people and been really successful from, as you say, looking at how, okay, with a blank piece of paper, what would your learning space be like if you're not confined to the, you know, four walls of a classroom and a traditional classroom that you're there. And just having those the sort of discussions that sparks up a debate has just been great to be part of. And actually then the realisation that actually it's not the shape of the room, maybe it's more what's inside the room. So maybe you do go with standard shaped classrooms and not have anything that's weird and wacky. But it's good to have that level of conversation that brings you round to that piece of thinking. But yes, from that to our values and our philosophy, it's been a really interesting journey, and we hope that that will continue next year, especially as we have another year in between. So if there's anybody in the Midlands area, West Midlands area, who's interested in being a smart creative, then please do make contact and come and join us. It's been a great group to be part of.
Going back to the it's not about kits and measuring success, and obviously you know you've got a good duration of time now to sort of measure what works, what doesn't, and you know I think one of the things that people look to you for is having that knowledge of all of these different platforms, and you know there are a lot of things out there, so what works, what doesn't, and what works for students and what works for teachers. How do you go about measuring the success, and do you have any tips for others listening about efficacy and how to kind of track and sort of pilot these schemes?
Well, there is a real danger of it's a bit like being in a sweet shop. And, you know, there's some great things. You walk around the Bet Show, for example, and, you know, I could spend £1 million within half a day, you know, walking around there. But it is about perhaps taking a step back and thinking, OK, what's going to make the most impact with the least amount of investment, whether that's monetary-wise or whether that's time-wise? What's going to have the most impact for our staff? What's going to have the most impact for pupils? And how are things going to work together? And I think sometimes I've certainly been guilty of it, where you look and see the latest shiny thing, whether that's an app or a device or whatever it is, and you think, I must have one of those, without thinking how it's going to link to all other things as well. So it's looking at how these things actually work together. And I think with many teachers, when you do see something, it is about testing it in your own classroom first. And that's certainly a culture that we've developed here at Shireland, is, you know, don't just go for it and adopt it. Just test some of things first, to see whether or not it's worth then investing in whole scale wide, or going to the head and saying, look, and we need to do this. I mean, there's some great pieces of research out there that perhaps teachers aren't aware of, things like the EF toolkit, where things have been independently evaluated and have got some real weight behind them. So going and having a look what works and what doesn't work, rather than just perhaps looking and buying the first thing that you see off the shelf.
Good advice. And what's Maths Flip as well? So I had a quick brief look at that, but it looks like that's also trying to chart what's effective.
Yeah, I mean, Maths Flip was born from, I met a guy called Alan November, who is out in the States and come over to do some work through the SSAT in about 2011. And that's where I first heard the word flip learning. And there were about three different things on this course that he showed us, but this one really resonated because for us at Shine, it just seemed like the next natural step for what we were already doing in terms of posting lessons online and setting work. The idea of work at home being more effective and enabling assessment for learning before you even get into the lesson, so you can better differentiate and accelerate that learning, was something that we thought, actually, this is an approach. It's not about the technology, it's mm-hmm. about the approach. And you know, we talked about icing and cake. This is absolutely fundamentally cake. Mm. And so we adopted it as a method here at Shireland. We've been using it since. And of all the things that I've seen make a difference here, I think flip learning has been one of the top five that have. So we wanted to see whether or not, okay, we could make it work at Shireland with all the great kit that we've got here and the support as well. But could flip learning work in other contexts as well? So we wrote a bid to the EF to run a project. It's a randomised control trial with 24 primary schools across the West Midlands region. We've just finished that and we're waiting for the report to be written. But they gave us the context of maths and they said, OK, yes, you can do this, but we want it to be in maths and we want it to be in years 5 and 6. So we've just finished that and we're just awaiting the results and it's fingers crossed. But we've looked at the SATS data that has come out and it looks really promising. But as I say, this autumn is when the final report comes out.
Okay, excellent. So hopefully we can share that in the autumn. Just thinking about the actual school here and the academy, you know, going right back to the early 2000s and Mark, could you give a little bit of a setting as well as to that story as well before we jump into some of the amazing things that you showed me here and just to mm-hmm. give a bit of context?
Well, Sir Mark Grundy, who's been here since 97, was knighted for his services to education and technology. So there's been a long tradition here of using technology for school improvement. So that philosophy is well embedded here. And, you know, one of the things I say, you come to teach at Shan, you expect to use technology in your teaching and learning. It's a given.
Yeah.
And I think it was the former Education Secretary, Estelle Morris, who wanted to see the impact of technology. And this is going back well over 10 years now. And so Shireland was part of one of three authorities. So Sandwell, Barkingham, Dagenham and Durham, that was part of a test bed where we looked at whether technology had an impact in schools and attainment. And it was great to be teaching in a primary school that worked with Shireland at the time when this project was there. And that's where I suddenly saw that technology could make a difference in my classroom. It was since then, we just haven't stopped. And I think there's always been a culture here of trialling things. And sometimes things don't work. You know, sometimes we do buy the bit of kit that's shiny and it doesn't quite work for us. And yes, sometimes we see projects and they don't work as well. But there are ones that do. Things yeah. like flip learning, you know, you suddenly put them into your toolkit and that stayed there. Our learning platform, which is Office 365, is absolutely at the heart of what we do. And there's so much that hangs off that. You know, things like class sites where teachers have got an online site. It's not rocket science, but it's just fundamental. It's that cake bit again of what every teacher does. And I think that's the other thing. For systemic change and transformational change, it has to be about everyone and not just about the few creative, innovative teachers, because that way you're never going to really transform a school and to change a school.
Because it becomes that person's sole responsibility as opposed to everyone's.
Absolutely, and they leave. Yeah. And what happens then? Yeah. You can't be reliant on the hero teachers. They're great to have. Give me a staff of 180 who absolutely do everything to a certain level, rather than two or three hero teachers any day. Mm.
Interesting. And we've just done the tour, and you've taken me to the immersive room, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Which, if I describe it, is probably like going to the Greenwich Observatory, but you know, you're there, all of a sudden you're, you know, traveling through space or learning about Van Gogh, or you know, so a fantastic tool to engage students and also to inspire teachers, I think, to deliver their lessons. Could you tell us a little bit about the story behind that?
Well, it came about, went to visit, I think it was Ironbridge Gorge Museum about 8 years ago, and they had a new reception built, and they had lots of different projections. And at the time, it was really quite wow. You walked in, there was the noise, the sound of a foundry. You could see people working in the foundry. You could see children playing on the streets, and it just kind of overwhelmed the senses, and you actually felt submerged into this world. It was a great. And we always said that we would love to be able to replicate that. Fast forward to a couple of years ago, and we had our money from becoming an academy, which the money had been delayed, and we had a new build. And when we spec'd it, we said we wanted an immersive room. And it's about all the things that you said about the engagement. It's about engaging children so they want to learn. But it's also about the experiences that they have, because for many of our children, they might not go to an art gallery. They might not get a chance to go to Greenwich Observatory, maybe, to go and look at those things. They might not get a chance to go even up the road to the Black Country Museum and look at a Victorian classroom. What our immersive room does, it allows a teacher to develop an experience, a learning experience, that the children, the students are just submerged into, whether that is a Victorian classroom or a Viking ship or the solar system or under the water swimming with dolphins, or whether it's having a debate about Boudicca and whether she was a hero or a villain and looking at sources of information. Or maybe actually I'm just going to use this room for parents' evening and showcase children's work in a much more dynamic way, rather than just backing it onto a piece of sugar paper and putting it up on the wall. And it is about bringing the experiences and bringing the children's work to life as well.
And we were talking about how, so your focus here or your strategy here is, and if you have that budget, to actually allocate a greater amount to sort of actual e-learning development specialists, to develop that content or to help bring those lessons to life, as opposed to, you know, just the sort of perhaps what a school would have, an ICT team that are more about procurement and that kind of thing.
Well, there's this two parts. So we have the ICT technicians, and then we have our e-learning team together, but they're just emerging and being merged into one. But you're right, we do have a larger team of people who can support the technology here at the school. We don't have any extra pots of money to anybody else. We just choose to spend our money differently, and probably have a smaller learning support team than perhaps most schools would, particularly in terms of our area of deprivation. Because for us, technology doesn't judge. You know, when the children walk through the door, it won't make a judgment about them and their backgrounds. And for us, it supports the learning as much as a person sitting next to them would.
Obviously, there's been a whole raft of changes in governments over the last few weeks, which have been very interesting to follow. So do you see this as an opportunity or a threat to education and to some of your plans? I mean, what's your sense on Justin Greening and the Regional Schools Commissioner prior to that? So that set up, and HE and K-12 coming together.
I think having HE come into the education is absolutely the right thing to do, because, you know, there's a lot of I know there's a lot of providers out there looking at the whole free school agenda and looking at how we can provide, you know, birth to university level sort of provision and getting that consistency across. So I think there's a real opportunity there. Justin Greening, interesting, we'll see. I do hope that, I hope in terms of technology and ICT computing that the pendulum swings a little bit back towards, you know, ICT and not just focusing on computing. Mm-hmm. I think just trying to get some balance there would be great. But having somebody who values it, I'm hoping that she sees, you know, if we are to produce the young people of tomorrow who have the skills that they talk about and business talk about, then they have to look at the curriculum and, you know, having this really narrow curriculum where, you know, only EBAC subjects now are being taught and, you know, you're finding it, talking to friends about their children and taking options, that it's really hard for them to choose the subjects that they want to do because the offerings are so narrow. So I hope that she has, not just in terms of technology and sees the role that that can play, but brings the arts perhaps a little bit back into it as well, because at the end of the day, it is about the whole child, and a whole broad and balanced curriculum surely is the way forwards.
And how do you go about supporting teachers here for coding and at primary level?
Well, here we've, when the primary curriculum came on board, we were able to support schools with that and brought our specialists and were able to run some courses on that. So from that perspective, we feel we're well equipped when the primary comes along to be able to deliver on that. But as I said, it isn't just about that. For us at the High Tech Primary, it's about using technology for learning. It isn't just about the curriculum elements for us. We want technology to underpin all aspects of the curriculum, not just within a pigeonhole of computing.
I've got this here as well about Minecraft. So you've got Minecraft Club. Have these run already?
Yeah. So we've had a group of enthusiasts. So we've done that this year. We've had lots of different clubs. We've got, you know, Desert Shireland Discs, a radio club. We've got Shireland TV, where a group of students actually produce 60-second news clips on a weekly basis. And these are all clubs that are run by the children. So in Minecraft, they've done all sorts from reinterpreting works of art, like Mondrian and Picasso and Monet into 3D worlds. We've had code-a-thons and code-offs with primary kids coming up as well and doing that. So we've had lots of different elements of this. So they've recreated the school in Minecraft. And they're also, one of their tasks in the autumn term is to help us, for them to help imagine Shireland Technology Primary School and what they would put in the school.
Completely different if you follow their plans.
Yeah, it could be. Be interesting to see what they... we just as we have a Smart Creatives for teachers to come and help us, we next year we'll be putting together Smart Creatives pupil and student group as well.
That's great.
From their perspectives and families.
And how about Desert Shireland Discs? I have to say that carefully.
So I just happen to be in the car traveling and I do listen to Desert Island Discs when I get a chance to, and I just thought it just suddenly came to me, Desert Shireland Discs. And we'd used radio. We have a number of clubs. We used to have it as a transition project, which we did some great work. And year fives also, we used to call it Radio in a Day. And they'd come up and produce a radio programme from various primary schools and then go back and they could put their podcast on their website. But we wanted to look at how the radio station could be used and embedded. And it ran as a gifted and talented group last year, and it will be going forward where they interview members of staff and they get to know them and their choices of music and their background in a little bit more detail.
And you were saying that you actually went right back to the BBC journalist to find out the process
it's a lot more
team there that put it together,
a lot more in depth than we thought. So it's not necessarily the end outcome that's important for us here, it's actually the process and the questions to elicit the best responses. They really have to think about those questions and the fact that for the actual Desert Island Discs, how they do it is they would have a questionnaire that was sent out beforehand for them to fill in before they even meet, and then the journalist bases their questions on their responses. So not necessarily the questions that are in the questionnaire, but from that it just starts as a prompt. And these are the skills that we wanted our students to have, the investigative journalism sort of. So not just thinking of some questions and asking them, but then really being able to probe and to respond and ask those responsive questions. So it's also about listening. Our students are generally really good at talking, but are they good at listening as well and then responding to what they've heard?
So, yeah, if they, perhaps we have to see if we can get one of those up on the podcast.
Yeah.
As an example, it'd be quite good. So just to wrap up, obviously, we've had a great week of sunshine in many parts of the country. So what's on your summer reading list now that we're into those summer months?
Do you know, I'm one of those teachers who... if you come and look at the books that I've got, it looks like I'm incredibly well read, but I'm one of those people who buys them, puts them on the coffee table and then never gets around to reading them. Yeah. So I've got loads that I've started. I'm reading Andy Buck's Leadership Matters at the moment, so I should finish that and be able to get through that. I have got, I think there's Andy Morris's, who's a local head teacher to here, The Art of Outstanding. So I've got his book that I'm ready to read. But I've also just got some fiction books that I just want to get. Girl on a Train is sitting there ready for me to read. So I need to do that.
And are there any top apps that you love as well that you'd like to recommend? Or are you
I'm not going to say Pokemon Go.
You know, let's not bash Pokemon Go.
I have no. I have to say, I got it as much as a deterrent from my daughter using it, because I thought if I download it and she sees that I've got
cool
it...
Anymore.
Then, yeah, it's not
like
cool
David
anymore
Cameron,
and she won't want to use it.
When he said, you know, he listened to the Arctic Monkeys, killed them. And how about relaxing over the summer?
Oh, really looking forward to holiday, which part of it will be visiting Russia and St. Petersburg. So
wow.
I'm really excited about being able to go there and see that. And Berlin as well, Checkpoint Charlie. So got some interesting places lined up to visit. I'm not a person that kind of sits down and does nothing. I have to be doing all the time.
Yeah.
I'm planning for next year. So we've got our DfE visit, who will want to look at their education brief for the primary. So no doubt I'll be working on that.
Yeah, well, wonderful. Thank you so much, Kirsty. Oh. And hopefully I'll come back when in 2018, if
yes.
not before.
Yes, fingers crossed. Thank
All right.
you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Next week, we will have a bit of a throwback to Teach Meet London Boat from July with Digital Sisters, Teacher Toolkit and Alana Gay from Women Ed. Take care and have a great week.